Hello and welcome to Our Dad's Died with me, Tom.
And me, Rich.
This week we are talking about therapy. Yes. The thing that was the title of this episode when you clicked it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, funnily enough, is the thing we're talking about. It wasn't a trick. They're getting weirder, aren't they? They're getting weird, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got to find something new to talk about each week. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking about our experiences with therapy, from the good to the bad, yeah. To the, frankly, quite weird and potentially illegal.
I not to preview the episode too much, I question whether there was some illegality involved. I think it's possible that one of Rich's therapists is now in prison.
It is starting to look more and more that way.
It's almost slander, but there's so few details given, I think we're fine.
But it was a really, it was a really fun conversation. It was a lot more fun than any therapy session I've ever had.
That's true.
Give it a listen. We'll be back at the end to talk about a little bit more about this and then say goodbye. But in the meantime, here's us talking about therapy.
Ring a ding ding.
Have you ever had therapy?
Me.
Yeah, Tom Steve Gherkin.
Yeah, I've had therapy a few times in my life.
Yeah. Had you ever had therapy before your dad died?
Yes, so I have a really interesting relationship with dad therapy in that I had therapy for something which happened at work, and that therapy ended up being about my dad's impending demise.
Oh, I see. So it began because of something else, and then midway through, the old cancer reared its ugly head. And
well, cancer's head was reared. I mean, when I started in my sort of dream job at the BBC in the newsroom in London, I'd worked for the BBC for a few years before then, but when I got the job in London in the newsroom, you know, this lifelong ambition achieved in my late 20s, which, you know, I'm still very proud of. I had that job for approximately 2 weeks when my dad discovered he had cancer.
Yeah, I remember that day because we met for we used to work quite close to each other in central London, and you texted me and said, "Oh, can we meet up after work?" And I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before, but we met at the pub that we'd always meet at, and I hadn't seen you since you'd started. You'd literally just started at BBC, and you sat down and were like, "I've got some news." And I went, "Oh no, he's been fired." And you sort of put your hand on my wrist and were like, "Please don't make any jokes." And then it was like, "Oh shit, yeah, something's..." And then we got incredibly drunk.
We got more drunk than is at all sensible. I mean, I was still doing my training at the time, and
yeah.
It was a work day, and we had...
It was a Monday, I think.
Oh, Christ. It's plausible.
Yeah.
We got comically drunk. It was terrible. And we played three clubs, which is
our favourite game.
Our favourite game. And we just got very, very drunk. My God.
Yeah, which, I mean, fair enough. So at that point...
It was really the origin of the podcast.
Yeah, that's where it began. There were somewhere in the back of my head when you said your dad's got cancer, I was like, "Oh, that's really bad." And a small part of me was going, "It sounds like a podcast.
Sounds like we've got some content."
Let's wait till he actually dies and then.
Yeah, there'll be content. Well, it took 2 years. Something happened at work and to be referred to therapy. And it was a really weird sort of experience in general, I think. The guy who was. I don't want to say who it was, but he had a... Because if I said his job title, you could look him up, right? So I'll just say he had a senior job in amongst, like, chartered psychologists in the UK. Yeah. It was like champagne therapy.
We can say, I think, it was Sigmund Freud.
It was the big man. It was the big man.
Straight to Freud.
He was based in the university, and, you know, you go there and you... go in through lots of students and find the way through a maze of a building and sit in a weird sort of classroom type setting, almost like where you would have a seminar at university. in those types of chairs. So it's already a harking back experience. And we had, you know, I would say half a session before he said, I think the root of your problems seem to stem around your father.
Right.
I was like, I thought we were meant to, you know, I was meant to come to these conclusions. And he was like, oh, yeah, but I thought you might... He didn't say, but he might as well have said, I thought you might have come to that conclusion, being that you just keep mentioning how your dad is dying and that makes you sad.
It's very much, I don't think it takes a qualified psychiatrist to have a conversation with someone whose dad is dying of cancer and be like, I'm getting the suspicion you might be sad about your dad dying of cancer.
Yeah, it feels like a theme.
We're not going to go into what the issue was that led you there in the first place, but how relevant was it to, like, how hard did you have to work to crowbar your dead dad in there?
Irrelevant. Only that a one of the catalytic events was me. It's a nice story in a way. Well, it's a classic story to fans of the podcast. I was down south at my dad's flat, and we were going to see, we went to the zoo. And then something happened, of course. And something happened in the emails, which I sort of sent off quickly. And that was sort of one of the events that led to it. But then this sort of the idea of leaving that and coming to London ended up actually being quite a stressful experience, which I carried with me into the workplace, as I now know. So, I don't think I had to work very hard. I think it was always there. And we started talking about it as all of these feelings that were being stored in a box. And he kept saying, like, what you keep doing is you keep almost having feelings, and then instead you put them into a box and go, well, when he dies, I'll just deal with it then.
I see. You had your own filing system.
Yeah, exactly.
The grief files.
The old grief files, the filing cabinet of grief. And I just had it all waiting to go. So when he eventually died, I could take them all out.
Yeah, you have a good variety of grief in there.
All the different experiences, the nuts and bolts. Yeah. But the risk with doing that is that you end up not feeling any of them. And that's what we ended up doing, actually. So I would say not the best way of dealing with it.
Did he give you any advice about, like, you seem to be putting all these feelings into a box. Here's how you stop yourself from doing that.
Well,
how did he say you should remove the box?
We did have to deal with the work concerns as well. So he was like, the work problems are kind of, those are really pressing because you have to deal with them. Otherwise, you won't be able to get to work. So let's get them solved, and then we can also do that. So initially, the box was like, he was like, I'm not happy about it, but you know, I'll go along with it almost.
He was like, the box is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of this, also quite helpful.
Yeah, it's convenient for us for
so
a moment.
So long term, we don't want the box, but short term, the box very handy, actually.
Short term, beyond 6 weeks, we don't want the box. But in the next 6 weeks, we'll keep the box for now. Let's just see how that goes.
It's like when a child finds a kitten in the street and they're like, can we just keep it for a bit? And you're like, well, look, obviously we can't keep it long term, but we'll keep the kitten for a while. And then gradually... Yeah. Both you and your therapist come to love the box. He now has a box for each of his patients. It's completely changed the way that he does.
He started putting his feelings in my box, which I think was out of order, personally.
Yeah, that's crossing a certain boundary, isn't it?
But it did allow him to not deal with them. So he told me at the time that the problem with the box is this: PTSD or trauma disorders like that come as a result of not dealing with emotions. So you have a situation and then you're meant to have an emotional reaction and your brain doesn't process it for whatever reason. And instead of kind of stopping what you're doing and processing it, you just go, nah, I won't have that. I'm actually happy not to. This is very simplified, obviously. But this is the simplified way he explained it to me, a fool. You know, so the problem with the box is you end up putting loads of emotions in the box, and then you think, well, I'll just feel those when he dies. And then he dies, and then you get loads of emotions at once, and then you keep remembering all these emotions you put in the box, and you either have to keep feeling them, or you're just, in a sense, traumatizing yourself or re-traumatizing yourself, which is the real problem with the box. So we did try and deal with the box.
Okay.
We did try and open it and just have a little root around, get some of the folders out, you know, open them up. What's this? What can we do with this one?
Rigorously organized, wasn't it? A to Z, all the way through, everything labeled.
So many Zs. Yeah. Zoo, of course.
One of the classic Zs. Zumba.
Harder to riff on Zumba. So we did open the box and have a little look. But there wasn't much doing with it, really. I think it was sort of outside his expertise or specialty.
Right.
This is the problem with it, really, is that the therapy relationship requires you to really trust the person you're talking to. At one point, he sort of revealed that he sort of really specialised in, like, couples therapy.
Oh, right.
And I don't know. I mean, he obviously meant it as a thing he was interested in. But it's from that moment I was sort of always in the back of my mind this thought of, like, you know, where you're not... I'm not two people. I'm just one.
Yeah.
You can't deal with
this. This isn't even your field.
Yeah. I tried to put it in the box, of course, but, you know, that's for dad box. I would have had to create a whole new box just for the therapist.
Or you could have got your partner to come in bringing her box, and then you'd have had two boxes... And he'd have been more comfortable with the second box,
I think, and more effective.
At any point did he say, "Do you want to bring your partner in?" Just he was like, "I'll feel a bit more comfortable if there's two of you here. It's weird to have an empty seat."
He did offer me a lot of relationship advice.
Did he? Unprompted?
He did. I wouldn't say unprompted, but I would say he was fishing for the opportunity.
Right, he was manipulating the conversation in that direction.
Yeah,
so he wanted back onto what he calls terra firma.
Yeah, he wanted to get in some safe ground where he could really offer some straightforward advice. You know, text each other about the things that have got to be dealt with in one app, and text each other about nice things on the other. You know, separation of nice and procedural messaging, that sort of business.
Yeah, and you were like, "Sorry, what's that got to do with my dad?"
Yeah.
I love the idea of you talking for 20 minutes about your upcoming and impending grief, and him being like, "Have you thought about texting your wife on a different app? Maybe. Could that help the situation? Maybe when you argue, you should hold hands. What, with my dad? Or no. Sorry, are we still talking about your dad? No. I mean your partner."
Sorry, just to be clear, all of this dad stuff seems to be affecting you. What if the box... you were in a relationship. I feel like I could get into it more.
I know I was dead against this at the start, but maybe we put all the dad stuff in a box and we'll just deal with the relationship stuff.
And it was very much like that, really. He was good on the work stuff, less probably less effective on the dad stuff, and I think that kind of jaded me towards trying the dad stuff again.
How long did you see him for?
Not that long, maybe 10 weeks, 12 weeks.
And
once a week, obviously.
Was that you at the end were like, this isn't helping, or I don't need it anymore?
No. That was, as anybody who's been to therapy in this country will know, that was the end of our allotted number of sessions, and the public healthcare system went, "And now you're cured." we're like, well, we could probably use some more.
No. I'm sorry. There are no problems that cannot be comprehensively solved in 12 sessions with a counsellor who isn't even qualified in your area.
Yeah. Once a week. And now done it. Nailed.
Yeah.
Done that. Solved that. That was the end of that one, and I kind of left it. And then he died, and I went again. But before we get into that... before your dad died, did you seek any form of therapy. I know you didn't know that your dad was going to die, but you know, for any other reason in your life.
No, I'd never had therapy. If you'd asked me the day before my dad died, do you have any deeper lying psychological problems, I'd have said, no, I am 100% fine. Ask me 3 months later, and I would have said, not only have I got the surface problem, the old dead dad business, turns out quite a lot of deeper, fairly well-rooted psychological problems that I thought were just normal, but aren't. No, so I'd never had therapy. I'd never considered therapy. And then my dad died. And then I think maybe something like that. I think one of the stigmas around therapy is that you don't have enough of a problem to go to therapy.
Yeah, right, of course.
And so I'd never considered any of my problems. I grew up in a nice middle-class family, and I was like, you don't get therapy if you're growing up in a nice middle-class family, because you can't have actual real-world problems. Mm. And then my dad died, and I was like, well, that seems like a real-world problem. I can go... And sort of a similar thing to you, where you sort of smuggled your Trojan horse was a work problem with a dead dad inside it. Yep. One of the less effective Trojan horses.
Yeah.
They wheeled that in, opened it up. It's just a dead guy. Oh, shit, it's my dad. That would be effective.
Oh, it's their dad. It was the king's dad or something was dead. Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely brutal. you imagine?
But mine was.
Sorry, I'm just sort
Trojan
of thinking
horse.
About the sort of Trojan brand name of the condom, and then there's dad and dead dads and a Trojan. I don't know. I feel like there's the materials there. You could think about it.
Yeah.
Use it in your routine. Just you know.
That's what you've done as a do-it-yourself joke.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You know, there's a lot of materials
IKEA
for joke.
Yeah. Flatpak joke. Here's all the bits.
Yeah,
pop them together however you like.
It's instructionless, but you can figure it out, you know. It's like when people take Legos, but they get rid of the instructions and they build something else. It's like that.
Yeah.
There's all the materials, that's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The joke's yours. And if the joke ends up being rubbish, the best part is, that's your fault.
Yeah, yeah. You built it wrong. Sorry, all the bits were there.
Sorry.
But my Trojan horse was the opposite. Yours was a Trojan horse with a dead dad inside it. Mine was a Trojan horse in the shape of a dead. Mine was a dead dad with other problems hidden inside it, essentially. And I wheeled this dead dad into counselling, and then was like, "Here's an opportunity to talk about the other stuff that I didn't think was a problem until just now." So I went. I think it was about 3 months after my dad died that I had like a proper, I've said before, like a little quiet breakdown that became quite serious. My little controlled explosion.
Mm.
And I took that to a man called Roger, the cheapest counsellor in the Doncaster area. Lovely man. Went round to his house. I'd emailed him before with quite a lengthy and overwrought email with all the things I was feeling, that to the point where I think he was amazed that I was sort of standing when I arrived, because I think he thought I was just going to be this absolute mess of a human. I went to see Roger, who was nice. He was like in his 40s, I think, quite a cool guy. And that was part of the problem, was that he was cool. I had recently lost a father. He was an older man. I think I immediately met him and was like, well, you're my dad now then, and I need to get you to like me. And it's quite a bad way to start therapy, to meet someone and think, I'm going to not tell you any of the stuff that I'm actually worried about, because more importantly, I don't want you to not like me because of it.
Oh, Rich.
Yeah. So I spent I did 4 sessions with Roger, essentially skirting around the key subjects.
What kind of stuff did you even say if you were sort of pretending everything was fine?
Well, I sort of said, I didn't pretend everything was fine, but I talked about my dad and I talked about things I thought it was acceptable to be upset about, things that I thought was acceptable to feel, when really what I should have done was just said how I actually felt. And this nice man would probably have been like, well, this is better, this is helpful. I talked at him for an hour once a week for a month, And then at the end of that, literally at the end of a session, just went, do you know what, Roger? I'm feeling so much better. I feel absolutely fine now.
Oh, my God. What, and in your own head going, I haven't said anything to you that's real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In my head being like, I am... It had made me feel so much worse, not just the counselling, but over the period of that time, I'd become worse, and this wasn't helping. So I was like, sack it off. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to confront any of these feelings. Maybe I should get a box, is essentially what I thought. From 4 weeks with Roger, I was like, this box idea actually sounds quite good. Let's pop it all in a box.
Did Roger not mention the box plan?
Roger had absolutely no box-based advice whatsoever.
Nightmare. I mean, this is classic. This is classic. Dealing with grief 101.
You'd gone to the very top. I was going in at the bottom level. You don't learn about the boxes until sort of year 10 of your career. Exactly.
You've got to go really deep in the trail. So where did you... you left Roger, a man who we're sure was a counsellor, are we?
Weird, 70% sure was a counsellor.
Yeah, you found him on...
The internet.
Any, like, a counselling website, or...?
I think it was, yeah. I don't remember. I found him in a real panic, in the sort of in the way that you order loo roll when you've got, like, two sheets of loo roll left. Of like,
oh, that's leaving it
next
close.
Next day delivery is fine, but I need it, actually, if anything, I need it right now.
Yeah, that's a same-day delivery situation, I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah, I was rushing, so I was just like, fuck it, Roger, he's 40 quid an hour, that'll do.
Particularly bearing in mind the grief you were going through at the time, how it affected your internals, yeah.
As we've talked about, there's a reason that that was the first analogy that came to mind for me.
So you just went Roger. On www.rogerisarealperson.com.
I went to roger.co.uk and thought, one of these guys has got to be a counsellor, surely.
It's definitely a counsellor. Roger is definitely a counsellor.com.
Roger the farmer? No. Roger the banker? No. Roger the fireman? Jesus Christ. Roger the counsellor, here he is.
/ don't ask me about my credentials. .html. Yeah.
Every time I asked to see his diploma, he said, I will get it, but it's quite a long way upstairs. And then he changed the subject. And after a while, you just stop asking.
He'd just ask you about your dad, and you'd go, oh, it's fine,
to be honest.
Fine.
How's your dad?
Fine. Yeah, Roger. Why are you always asking me questions?
Yeah, this relationship's got very one-sided.
Tell me about you.
Where can you start? Based on what you were saying about your counsellor obviously having a preferred area of expertise, Roger was similar. He seemed to be more comfortable when I talked about relationships. I think he thought that I was like a disaffected young man who sort of didn't know how to speak to women. And I'm very good at speaking to women. I've spoken to fucking loads of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Day after day, I'm talking to women.
Yeah, it's true.
But he kept sort of steering me onto that. And I remember one specific thing that he said in the last session when I was sort of like, yeah, this is definitely the end of this. Because I was in a new relationship and I was worried about how I felt in myself would affect that relationship. And I'd talked about a previous relationship. And he then said, I had a friend who had his heart broken, and it sounds kind of similar to that. And he was the same. He went through all this stuff, and after a while, he was like you. He just hated women. And I was like, hang on, Roger. I feel like you're projecting a little bit here. I don't think I ever said that I hated women. I said,
did Roger think you were an incel?
I think that's what he thought I was, yeah.
Oh, no.
I don't know how I'd given him that impression, but...
You did have your Jordan B. Peterson t-shirt, of course, didn't you, at the time?
Yeah, and this was 2014. I was a real Peterson early adopter.
Early days to Peterson. That and your Andrew Tate cap.
Yep, yeah, no one knew who he was. Even he didn't hate women at that point, but I led him down that path.
Early fact. The OG.
Yeah, me and Roger together. Yeah.
That's an incredible thing for a therapist. Well, I suppose a counsellor to say to a person.
Definitely a real counsellor as well.
definitelyrealcounselor.com. So he was that your only experience of attempting to seek professional help? I would say at best there you sought semi-professional help. I think in practice you probably sought amateur help.
He was a spirited amateur, Roger.
Yeah. he had nice ideas.
He kept his amateur status so he could counsel in the Olympics. That's the thing. He was talented. He could have gone pro, but he chose not to.
Was that the only time you tried to seek professional help, or was there a time you actually tried to, you know, go to anyone else?
I did go a few years later. I literally just once to a woman this time in Wimbledon.
One and done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it will become clear why.
Okay.
it was later, right at the start of 2019, it was. And I'd been through a breakup a little before, but I was feeling better in myself. And I'd always thought that once I'd sort of got a good grounding, that's a good time to go and get therapy. When you're not like desperate, when you're not on the last sheet of loo roll, but to do it when you've got some loo roll and you're like, well, I can actually get better quality loo roll now, and maybe work on the dietary problems that are causing me to go through. The metaphor gets strained, but you understand what I'm saying.
Speaking
of strained, I was straining. yes. So I went to see a counsellor in Wimbledon, and now you're paying London prices. So this lady was...
Of course, you were in Doncaster originally, so...
Yeah.
What's that? I guess that's a few pennies. Or do you trade bread, or how does that work?
Well, I would counsel him for an hour afterwards just to sort of level the playing field.
Bartering, yeah, great.
Yeah.
How much did that set you back in Doncaster, do you remember?
In Doncaster, it was 40 quid an hour.
In Doncaster pounds. That's quite reasonable, I think.
Yeah, and in Wimbledon in early 2019, it was £90 an hour. and again, probably, it was at this lady's house. Go on.
So that's probably good value nowadays, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd get counselling for 90 quid nowadays. I don't know. I don't know what the going rate is.
We'll find out if the counselling you did get was worth the £90, I suppose.
Yeah. It was at her house. She had a very different house to Roger. It was massive. Which the counselling took place in her pool house.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, we were sat in a room, and we could see through the window her private swimming pool. That was a big room. I mean, that room was the size of my flat. And weirdly, we sat at opposite ends of it.
Off the pool?
Almost a pool's distance apart. I don't know.
No, you didn't. Not really. You didn't sit a pool's distance apart.
Well, probably not a pool's distance, but a good, probably 5 or 6 meters apart.
How many ewes lying down for the listener? How many ewes lying down would that be?
How many me's lying down?
How many people lying down?
I'm trying to visualize it now. And probably in my head, it might be exaggerated
100.
Now, but I. Yeah. she was in a different room of the house. She was doing other things. It probably was like four of me lying down between the two of us. Like it was enough of a distance that at the start I was like, well, I'm having to raise my voice for you to hear me.
Yeah.
And that
crazy.
Doesn't really, for sort of discussion of very intimate topics, I don't want her like right up next to me.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't want her so far away I'm having to shout.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So she was really far away, and it was quite an echoey room as well. It's a pool house.
I don't think anybody has ever said that as criticism of a therapist before. She was just really far away.
She couldn't actually hear me.
It's crazy.
It was mad, and it was so stupid. And she was like, she was all right. She was quite old, I'd say. I don't want to guess, but like, you know, nearing the end of her career.
Hard of hearing, you're thinking.
Yeah, she's leaning in.
She's got
one of those old ear trumpets. She's keeps shouting at me louder, sweetheart.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Oh no.
It was, I don't remember much about sort of what I actually said, but I tried to be more honest this time. I'd learned from my mistakes with Roger. And so I was quite, but I was, I'd thought about what I wanted to talk about. So I was quite sort of level with what I was saying. And so to be fair to her, it probably wasn't the most interesting conversation anyone's ever had. But about 25 minutes in, I noticed that she was falling asleep. In the way that you do. I don't know if you've ever been in a meeting where it's like a warm room and you start to drift off and you can see someone, like, you know, you're trying to sort of use your eyebrows to keep your eyes open, just sort of, and blinking a lot. And then her head started nodding. And I specifically remember at one point her head nodding like too far, and she tried to turn it into a really enthusiastic nod in a kind of like, yeah, no, that's a really good point.
God.
And I could see what was happening, but I didn't, I wasn't in a great state. I didn't feel confident enough to be like, excuse me, you're currently falling asleep during my personal confession. And I used to talk about it on stage and say in the on stage version, I'd say that she fell asleep and I just went and sort of put the 90 quid on her desk and let myself out.
Yeah, nice.
That sadly isn't true, but it was not far off. She was genuinely on the way out, and then at the end she gave me like she didn't say anything, which is fine, but then she sort of wrapped it up at the end with the most sort of vague impersonal advice that it was like, you clearly haven't listened to anything that I've said because you've been asleep.
Falling asleep.
Like,
yeah.
None of this has gone in. And I thought about, like, I should have said, even in the moment, I was like, I should say now, I'm not going to pay you because you've been falling asleep all the way through this. But I didn't. I just went, 90 quid, is it? And she went, yeah, £90, please. And I gave it to her in cash. And I left. And then, worse than that, on the way home, I emailed her and said, I'd like to book in some more sessions with you. And
that's crazy.
She never responded.
Oh no! She was like, he was so boring. I'm not willing to fall asleep listening to him for £90 an hour.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I emailed her twice and she didn't reply.
You emailed again?
I emailed her twice to follow up on the email that
I'd
sent.
Holy moly.
So I was like, surely they're not allowed to just not reply.
That's crazy.
I'm allowed to say to her, you're not a good fit for me. I don't think, as a therapist, you're allowed to just ghost someone and be like, this boring bastard not coming back with his dead dad problems.
I don't want to be someone who's throwing around wild accusations.
Right.
But I would be interested in seeing her advert, because all I'm saying is she basically got you into her swimming pool. And was like, young man, coming to an old widower's house. She's a millionaire or something in Wimbledon with a pool. And, I feel like she wasn't there to listen to you talk about grief. I think she might have been expecting different services.
Yeah. Well, she did say, wear your Speedos, which I thought was odd. But then because the pool became apparent, I was like, well, maybe it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was like she was like saying, I'll pay you £90.
Yeah, it could be.
And it was like,
come and float in my pool for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Did the advert say that? Because that would have been a big clue that.
Yeah,
also,
that's what it
said. I don't know. I mean, if she'd fallen asleep, I think there would have been a really strong shout to get in her pool.
Yeah.
If you want to bring the bit back, it's a different punchline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. Just straight wake her up with a bomb.
Yeah. Thought, well, perfect. I've paid 90 quid for this. I'm going to have a swim.
Yeah, there's much cheaper ways to swim in a small pool, though, isn't there?
There are.
My worry was that I'd got like the wrong house and I just went round to like her next door neighbours and there was just this old lady, and she was too polite to say, I'm not a therapist.
Right.
I was too polite to ask, why are you falling asleep? And then at the end, I just went, here's 90 quid. And she was like, okay, fine.
And she just, £90, is she just, how old was this woman?
Well, that's the thing, I don't want to guess.
Why don't you want to guess? It doesn't matter.
No, because she's one of this podcast's biggest fans.
Oh,
so I don't want to.
She listens to it when she goes to sleep, does she?
Have you got any more? Did you go to therapy again, other than Sigmund Freud?
Yeah. So after Freud, and after the death, I did try a bit, but I didn't do the in-person one. I tried the over the internet, over the phone, counselling options, where you have to pay yourself. Much more reasonable price point, you know, £30. Well, not really, actually, because it's £30 for a half hour, so I suppose it was £60 an hour, so
yeah,
more expensive than going to someone's house in Doncaster. Though. But, you know, I mean...
But less expensive than going to someone's swimming pool in Wimbledon. So
yeah, I kind of felt like all I really needed to get out of this was... I was sort of doing... This was before I moved to Scotland, so it wasn't that long before, so I guess... Well, it must have been in 2021. Mm-hmm. And I'd reached that point where I was doing that because the old pandy, I was doing that thing, the thing that a lot of men do, where you sort of just burden your partner with all of your emotions.
Yeah.
And obviously we were doing the podcast by then, so, you know, we were talking to one another, but I kind of felt like what I needed in my head, what I needed was an old lady in a swimming pool. You know,
she's
floating around on the rubber ring or whatever, and I'm just sat there on the diving board, you know, 10 meters away, just talking. I just needed to get it out of my system. That's what I felt So I thought, well, if I do the phone counselling thing, what's good about that is, or the Zoom counselling as it was, what's good about that is, you know, they're just going to sit there and listen to me talk for an hour.
Yeah,
and that's all I really felt like I wanted. Out of that was just someone who has no choice because they've been paid to just listen to me talk. And let me tell you, I don't want to have yet another negative experience of counselling. And actually, my first experience of therapy was actually, I think, quite good. It's just it's the work-related stuff he was brilliant for. And clearly, had there been relationship issues, he would have been off the chain for them. But the dead dad stuff wasn't really his expertise. So I can't really hold it against him that he couldn't cure all my ailments in one go.
Yeah.
This one was just, I mean, it was an absolute shocker.
Really?
The person, so I mean, I even said, well, I'll get into that. So we started the thing, and then she's saying, you know, oh, well, it's nice to talk to you. And I said, oh, it's funny we're doing this over the phone rather than in person. It's not what I'm used to. And she said, oh, yeah, this is how it is now. This is the future. That's the old way of thinking, having to do it all in person, do it all over this. Now it's the same thing. And from that point, I was thinking, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a different thing.
It's completely different.
You won't have known this because there was 10 meters between you and the woman, but the intimacy of being there with a person opposite you does kind of force you to speak reality. Whereas if you're on Zoom talking to somebody you don't know, there is a real coldness to it, a stunted kind of coldness to it, which you kind of forget you're even talking to someone. You're just sort of talking into the ether. Now, obviously, she knew this was a problem because I would assume she knew this was a problem anyway because she interrupted me almost every other sentence. I mean, she was she wanted to get words in. She wanted to, and she was like, I am going to analyze every single thing you say. I am going to break it down. It was like if you've ever listened to a YouTube clip of James O'Brien on LBC.
Yeah.
Like someone will say something. They'll mention Marxism and he'll go, all right, define that then. Come on, here we go. No, we can't talk about the thing you called about until you define Marxism. You brought it up. It was like that, you know.
Right.
I sort of did this. I was sort of in a sort of slightly dark place and I sort of made a joke where I was like, well, I don't, you know, I don't think I'm a psychopath, but sometimes I worry that I might be because I don't feel emotions properly. But like as a joke, I didn't say it as earnestly as I did then. I meant it more funnily. But she would not let it go. She was just hooked onto it. And like everything I kept saying, she kept like bringing it back and being like, but do you think you're a psychopath? I was like, no. And she was like, do you think, why did you say it then? Do you
think maybe she had like a quota of psychopaths to hit?
She was trying to make
you get a bonus if you've got a psychopath on your books. And so she was like, well, no, I think it sounds like you're probably a psychopath, to be honest.
I feel like I'm going to check the box anyway. So,
yeah,
she kept asking me and she just kept bringing it back. And it was, and I was getting hot. Like, I was getting annoyed because I'm talking to this person and trying to do my thing, which was just to talk words. And at one point I said, How am I meant to feel better if you don't let me talk?
Did you say that to her?
Because it was over Zoom and there was no video or anything. It was just audio. It felt like I could say whatever the fuck I wanted.
Yeah.
Because it was so detached from reality. I mean, she was like, oh, we're just trying to dig into this, you know. And I'm just trying to, what I'm trying to get to the bottom of is why you keep mentioning that you feel that you might be a psychopath. And I was like, I don't keep mentioning it. I said it once as a joke, and every other thing I say about my dad, you bring back to you thinking I'm a psychopath. I don't keep mentioning it.
You keep mentioning it. You're a psychopath.
All of that real. All of that really happened. Jesus. In real life, all of that happened. And obviously, I did the full hour because I'd paid £60 and I just, was looking at the clock, just watching the clock for the last 15, 20 minutes, waiting, for it to finally be over.
And how did you feel afterwards?
I was so angry. I remember being absolutely furious and just like, this was the worst experience I could have had with this, which unsurprisingly led me to go, well, I'm just never going to do counselling again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard thing, isn't it? That you have a bad experience of it. It does make it very hard to want to go back because it's such a difficult thing to do anyway in the first place. How do you feel about it, about therapy or counselling in general?
General, good thing. I think there's a tricky situation right now where there's probably a lot of people who need it. And that means we have very big waiting lists. And obviously that means that probably most people at this point could benefit. So it's something you said earlier, actually. It makes you feel like I'm getting in front of someone who actually really does need it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't really need it that much. I'm probably fine. Yeah. I mean, I know that I'll carry on fine without. I also know that I would benefit quite a lot, but I'd be fine enough, really. So I think others could probably do better. And that's how I feel right now, which is not a good thing, really, and certainly isn't what I would say to our listeners. I would say that I think that in general, if you can get yourself on a waiting list, get on a waiting list. Maybe I should get myself on a waiting list. I could put myself on a waiting list.
When you said, you know, I know I'll be fine, but I know I would greatly benefit. Like, you can do better than fine. You're allowed to, if you feel like something will make your life, like the experience of being alive, better, and you know it will help, then you should do it.
Rich, if I started having emotions again, it would ruin this podcast.
I don't know if it would. I think the presence of the box, sometimes, if you open the box... I mean, on the day that... Imagine if we had a box opening. We did an unboxing, but it was all of your emotions. If we did that on YouTube, that would go viral.
That'd be amazing. Get an animator in. Get Jaden Animations to do all of my emotions coming out of the box. Oh, what a harrowing thing for YouTube.
Yeah.
I think the box is open, I think, is the point. Is the metaphor is that the box is open. And the problem is the box being open has... what it needs is for someone to, close it, but, like, But like also all the emotions that are out go, well, let's now file them where they're meant to be out, rather than letting them just roam free and do what they want.
Unleash them.
Yeah, because the box was opened when he died.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. But, you only went... I mean, I've been to more, is what I will say.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you've definitely. Only been I've, to...
I've been to definitely, five
definitely,
sessions.
Definitely a therapist.com. And... I feel like Sexcapade got wrong. I don't know if I should label it as such, but it feels like maybe.
Yeah. When you add it all up, in 33 years of life, to have had 5 hours of counselling, 4 of which were with Roger.net, and one of which was me talking to, essentially a corpse. Yeah, I don't feel like I've given therapy a fair shot. I'm a hypocrite when it comes to therapy. I think I would always tell people to get it. I think it is, from everyone that I know who's had it and everyone who goes regularly, it's a really, really positive thing and makes a huge change in your life. I often have told friends or partners of mine that, if they've mentioned they're thinking about getting therapy, I'm like, definitely go and do it. It could completely change your life. It'll make you so much better. I'm not going to do it because I'm fine.
But yeah,
I'm one of those people. I don't want to, for the same reason that a lot of people don't want to, which is that it's scary. Like, the box is there. Mm. Let's say, if we're keeping that going,
all right, let's
and
keep
you're
the
like,
box.
It's fine. It's I am fine. And a lot of people say you go to therapy, you have to start digging through stuff that is traumatic and difficult for you. And I remember after going to that, the one session with the sex lady, I did come away from that. And I went to the pub with my brother the next day and I was talking to him and I was like, I am having the same feelings now that I was having before I went to see Roger. With these, the exact same, and it was like a physical sensation of like certain memories that would keep coming up and would cause me like this really odd physical feeling of like something going wrong in my head. And that came back from having just talked to this non-responsive woman about them. And that's what I think happens. You go to therapy and sometimes it gets worse because you have to go through. It's like you were talking about, you have to process the difficult things and it's a lot easier to not process them, but maybe it's better long term to process them, and that would be my advice, is to go and process them, and I do not ever take my own advice.
Well, we can I suppose we can deal with this in some capacity, mm-hmm. in that we can put ourselves on lists, but what we can also do is we can get someone on this podcast.
Oh, get a therapist?
An actual therapist. Because we...
Roger? I'm going to get in touch with Roger.
He's not a therapist, though. He's not a therapist.
I've still got his email address.
He's not.
He might still be practicing.
He was never. When are you going to realise this?
No, he's actually now a leading figure of the alt-right movement, unfortunately. He's a Leninist.
Oh, nightmare. We can't get Roger, but I think in amongst the circle of people we know on the internet, and certainly people who listen to this, and I'm sure we can find through these circles a therapist and get them on this podcast with us, and we could do like an on-air therapy. On therapy. Oh.
On therapy,
therapy is sort of a thing, isn't it?
We've got a bit of time before we find this person, so we can work on that.
Yeah.
We can break
that. We can get the name right. We're not going to, are we? It's going to be on therapy.
No, it's
going to
be on therapy.
That's the problem with it. It will be on therapy. Yeah. No one's happy about it. So we'll do it. So I think if we do that, at least what we can do, is show that it's basically fine. Because even though we're criticising it and all that, and we had slightly murky experiences around some of them, I think it is. I think we both think it's a good thing. So I'd like it if we put our money where our mouths were.
Okay, I'm up for that. Let's get some on air and
on
unfair rupee.
Unfair rupee.
That will be crucially free, I assume.
Yeah. That's what's at the heart of this, is I don't want to pay again.
Yeah.
Okay, therapy.
Yeah, I'm up for that. It would be good to see the other side, because we've detailed some possibly unlicensed therapists during this discussion. It'd be good to get an actual licensed one on to
let's
give
see
you
what a licensed
story.
One can do. We'll see what we can do. I think we'll see what we can get. If it ends up being a couples counselor, then we're just going to accept that.
We'll do it that way.
We'll do the opposite. We'll do the same thing I had, actually. We'll get a couples counselor who just has a go at the dad stuff. Something you said in the intro there, where you said that was more fun than any therapy session you've had. And actually, I think to some extent, I mean, no, to all extents, it was more fun. But I wonder if to some extent it was more helpful in a way.
I mean, in my case, it was certainly more honest. I say that much. Actually told you the truth.
I mean, it sounds like in your case, you in both instances, it was sort of a net loss, obviously financially.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But in this case, do you think it's almost a net gain in a way?
Oh yeah, I think so. Not if you take into account the five sessions of counselling and this hour, it's still a net loss. But from this, I enjoyed that a lot.
Of course, and I do of course charge you £60 an episode.
And rightly so.
Yeah, it's a lot of
honour to be here.
It's a lot of money. I have to declare it. It's terrible. Yeah. But it was good. It was very funny. I thought I actually didn't know the swimming pool story. This is what I love about this podcast, is we talk about things when we have drinks anyway outside of this. But I didn't know the story of you and an old lady sitting across from each other at a swimming pool. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was. It feels like a dream, but I'm relatively certain it happened. It was baffling. And I do think it's important to say that our experiences of therapy are probably not indicative of therapy more broadly. But it would be less funny if we just came on and talked about how we'd been really helped by counselling.
Yeah, did you, I did say, you know, the first one I had, where that was his specialty, he was very helpful. Did you have, I mean, in reality, in practice here, when you found these people in therapy, were you looking for cheap therapist London when you popped it into Google?
certainly Roger was literally, he was the cheapest one I could find.
I'm
very concerned that it's going to turn out there's only one counsellor in Doncaster called Roger.
Oh, no. Well, I think that'd be fine, because it was your fault. you didn't tell him the truth.
Yeah, true. He won't be able to identify me, so it's fine. Also, I changed his name at the start of this.
So you've gotten away with it there.
If you do find a Roger in the Doncaster area, it's not him.
If you do go to counselling in the Doncaster area, and it's, you know, he's got the old Tate Crew shirt, hashtag Tate was right or something, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, it could be our guy.
Could be the man. Yeah, sorry I cut you off there.
No, I don't think that there was anything useful that I got from any of those therapy sessions, but that is most likely because of the way that I was sourcing them, which was,
the price point.
Cheap. And the second one, I think, I mean, listen, sometimes your therapist is going to fall asleep. It just will happen. It's like an occupational hazard. Try not to get one of the sleepy ones.
Yeah, try not to get one of the sleepy ones, I suppose. My experience of counselling was a very similar one. When I paid for that online, I did just get the cheapest thing available. And obviously, I think to some extent, pay peanuts, get monkeys. You know, if you do decide to get the cheapest thing you can get, maybe it won't be as good as the more expensive ones. I don't actually know. We both have the very limited sample size. We would encourage people to try. I think trying is
absolutely
better than not trying. Even if you try and you get someone who isn't very good and it doesn't help you very much, then at least you tried. I mean, you know, there's nothing. Yeah. At least you gave it a go. Like, if you don't try, then that's not going to help you. But one thing that might help you is talking to someone in a similar situation. And I think that, you know, having a drink with my pal and talking about my feelings was much more beneficial to me. Would be my personal thing, and that was my of course I'm talking about the box, my best friend.
Yeah, you pour a bit of beer in your mouth, a bit of beer into the box.
It's in a box. Yeah. And we just talk. Problem. It's funny that I can hear the box talk now. I couldn't at the start, but now I can hear the box talk.
Yeah.
I've actually done generative AI for the box. So it's got a character.
It is important that we say that our official advice is not get drunk with your friends and talk about your problems rather than going to therapy. Therapy is a good idea. But I guess the lesson is you might not get it right first go. Sometimes a lot of people say that your first therapist isn't the right person for you. You try again. And it's easy to get dissuaded. But if you feel like you need it, then don't be dissuaded.
If you can get on an NHS waiting list and you can afford to wait, if you like in that other use of the word, then that's fine. But talking to people in real life is much, much better than not talking to people in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, my hot recommendation would be find a willing friend who's willing to bend an ear and listen. You'd be stunned by how many people you know would be willing to listen. And you would also be astounded by the sheer power that you have by talking to them about it. They can't stop listening. They have to listen.
Yeah, they really do. And it is remarkable how good it can feel to just say, I mean, at the start when I was talking about Roger and not saying what I actually felt, it is remarkable how much better you can feel when you say the thing that actually bothers you to somebody else.
Yeah.
And it almost doesn't matter what they say back. Sometimes it just feels better to say it.
So we would recommend just saying things.
Just say it. Just say it out loud.
Just say it. Just say it out loud. Just say it out loud. Whatever's bothering you, get it off your chest.
If you want to save yourself £90, find a sleeping woman on a bus and say it to her.
Yeah.
It's easier. Scream it at her from a distance and then run off. That's absolutely fine. And you'll get about as much as I did.
You can replicate Rich's experience by going to your local public pool. Find someone asleep on a sun lounger and just yell it from across the pool. Yell at her. It's the same experience, but you'll have more money. But we do recommend getting yourself on a list. And obviously, if you have more serious concerns or thoughts, there are obviously lots of helplines available if you pop them into Google.
Yes.
I have problems. Who can I talk to, please? And Google will very friendly advise you lots of charities like Samaritans and other charities like that that you can talk to. It was a lovely podcast, Rich, as they always are, but we have to stop talking eventually.
We do have to end it eventually, don't we, unfortunately. We have to stop talking.
I never want to stop talking, but we always have to, don't we?
We do, don't we? If nothing else, we've got to start looking for a therapist because we've made a promise now. We've made a commitment.
Yeah.
We will have a follow-up episode in which we will have the two of us talking to a licensed therapist about our grief and about therapy more generally to give a more balanced perspective on the profession.
Yeah, to give it from someone who can tell you about all the benefits it can have. And I think we have told you about the benefits it can have. Perhaps we weren't lucky, you know, with our, because we were being tight and also unwilling to wait.
Yeah, impatient,
impatient
tight.
And tight. Just be willing to wait and you'll be fine. Lovely podcast as ever. Next week, what will happen? We don't know yet.
No, we don't. There will either be an episode with a fantastic guest or an episode with us. We have got a guest, but I don't know if it's going to be next week or the week after. But
now I know.
Listen, there will be an episode next week. Mark my words.
Listen.
Listen here.
All you
doubters out there.
There'll be one.
All the people that are out there saying there won't be an episode next week.
Oh, it's going to be one. There'll be one, you bastards. Until next week.
What's most important is that, episode or no episode, remember, death comes for us all.
But it comes to you first.
Bye-bye. Nice. Stop recording.